This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello, and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to hear what I have to say. I want to mention real quick, you can listen to the podcast on pretty much any app out there that you have. You can also use your smart device. You can just say your activation word. I won't say it because I don't want to set it off. Say your activation word and then say, listen to the Covert Nerd Podcast, and it should play the latest episode. Also, go to covertnerd.net for any of the previous episodes and subscribe so that you get notified when the latest episode is out. Also want to mention real quick our sponsor, Rainbow Comics. During this time with the coronavirus, you can still get comics. Just go to the website and I'll include a link in the show notes. Also their phone number so you can call up Tim or you can go to their website and order them and have them delivered right to your home. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with Randy. We have Randy on today. We're going to be talking about our top three NES games. And Randy's been on some shows before. So again, I'll put in the show notes the previous episodes that Randy has been in. But Randy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and let people know where they can harass you or
awesome.
or contact you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. I'm Randy, and you can hear me talk about TV, movies, comic books, stuff like that on the Grolic Cinematic the Grolic Podcast and the Grolic Cinematic Universe. Those are two different podcasts, but they're like sister, brother, mother podcasts. But yeah.
Awkward cousins.
Awkward cousins. Yeah, one is a spinoff of the other. The Grolic Podcast is mostly comic books, TV, and some movie talk, you know, kind of the geekier stuff. And then Grolic Cinematic Universe is specifically movies, and we review a themed double feature every episode. And then at the end of the episode, we pitch a shared like our idea of what a shared cinematic universe between those two movies are. And I've found that the more different the movies are, the more fun that segment can be. And I do a bunch of other stuff, but main thing, grolixpodcast.com, you can find me there. It's grawlix, by the way. And then other times I hijack Covert Nerd so we could talk about video games.
Yeah, we kind of got into this rut or groove, whatever you want to call it, talking about video games. And we've just found dozens of different angles that we can do to you know, from consoles to Nintendo's to arcade games, whatever. But anyway, it's always usually video game themed is kind of what we've been sticking to. So it's fun. So today we're going to be talking about the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, of course, but specifically the games. And so we want to go through three of each of our favorite games and maybe throw in a few others there at the end. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But we're going to be grabbing, like I said earlier, our awkward square controllers. And we're going to be listening to 8-bit music loop over and over and over again. And because that's what they did on these games. We'll touch on that later, at least on my picks. But first, I wanted to do a little quick trivia for Randy. We'll see if we can stump him today or not. I don't know. But we got three trivia questions for you.
It's not hard to stump me.
All right. Well, I think you'll be fine. The first question is, and these are all NES related, who is Little Max Trainer in Punch-Out? Do you know his name?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to scroll through my notes. I didn't put his name in my notes. spoilers. What is his name? There's Mac. What is his name? I keep thinking Rocky, but that's definitely not Rocky. Because
he kind of has a nickname. Starts with D. I don't know if that helps any. It's only three letters.
Is it Don?
It's Doc.
Doc.
Jerome Doc Lewis.
How did I not? Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Well, this one will be easy. You'll get this one. This is, you're a little pink cloud-like thing. You suck up enemies and spit them out at your enemies. You can suck up air to fly and gain weapons to use in your little pointy hand. Which game is this?
Your little pointy hand. I wanted to drag this one out, make a joke, be like, Kid Icarus. No, that's Kirby. That one's
Kirby,
pretty easy.
Yep. All right, I figured that one you'd get pretty easily. Okay, this is a movie. So in Ghostbusters 2, the Ghostbusters used a modified blank controller to guide the Statue of Liberty through New York City. What was the name of the controller?
They didn't use the power glove, did they?
Nope.
No, okay. That's the most... I'm thinking the wizard.
The wizard, yes. Yeah, that's the wizard.
So bad. What did they use? God, it's been so long since I watched Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, me too.
I don't remember this coming up on our weird accessories episode either.
No, I think I may have mentioned it once, but yeah, no, we didn't have this.
Well, is it the power pad?
No, it's the NES Advantage. Remember, it looks like an arcade joystick.
Is that the joystick one? Okay.
Yeah. I remember because we had that one where you could turn up the speed of the, had a little dial on it. You could turn up the rapid speed button on it and
really
looked like an arcade joystick. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of cool.
I told you, you stumped me on those. Okay. I should have known the first one, especially given one of my picks on this coming up here in a moment. But that third one, it's been so long since I watched Ghostbusters 2. That's a good one. I still don't remember it even after you mentioned it. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, they kind of plop it down in the middle and you're like, oh, so cool. a Nintendo advertisement in the movie, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. Product placement for sure.
Maybe the Grolic Cinemax universe needs to do a crossover with Ghostbusters 2 and The Wizard.
The Wizard. Oh, my God. Dude, that would be... Okay.
You look at the total opposites. That's really... Or maybe like Care Bears.
I really like the wizard idea because just being able to throw Nintendo accessories and ghosts together, that sounds great.
That has potential.
And a road trip movie? Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. Well, thanks, Randy, for humoring me. Maybe next time then we'll switch it. You can ask me some trivia questions.
All right. I'll stump you.
So let's dive right in, Randy, with NES games. What was your first, not necessarily your favorite, but your first pick?
Okay, my first pick... I will say mine are ranked. I'll go ahead and put this as maybe my favorite. And it's the most obvious one. Super Mario Brothers 3, which obviously here's some info. I don't have a whole ton of info because it's Super Mario Brothers 3. Everybody knows about this game. But it was
sorry to interrupt, but it kind of segues. The Wizard was a big Super Mario 3 commercial.
It was. I'm fascinated about the backstory behind that movie. And I remember as a kid enjoying that movie. I've never come back to it. I bet it's so blatant and awful now, but
even more reason to have it on the GCU.
Man, I think I finally have a good excuse to invite you over to GCU. That's a great idea.
There you go.
All right. So yeah, released in Japan October 23rd, 1988, North America on February 12th, 1990, Europe October 29th of 91. Wow, I didn't realize there's quite a gap between all of those. Like Japan and US, or at least North America, was pretty close, but Europe had to wait like a year. Wow,
you're right. So you got almost
2 years.
2 years between. Wow, I didn't realize that either.
Poor Europeans. I'm sorry. You guys kind of got the short end of the stick when it came to some video game releases.
I guess so.
That's probably why the computer systems, I never really had the computer video game systems, but those were super popular in Europe for a long time.
Yes, they were. Yeah, this is probably why.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll just jump into what I liked about it. I mean, it's Super Mario Brothers 3. It's a great game. I think I've even talked about it on this show before. But visually and also in terms of the feel of the controls, it was, no pun intended, leaps and bounds more advanced than the first Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 1. I mentioned that one because Super Mario Brothers 3, I mean, it's a sequel to that, because what we got at Super Mario Brothers 2, of course, wasn't originally a Super Mario Brothers game. And I think that works because it's similar enough that it fits into the series, but it's also different enough to where it's like, it's its own thing. And then, yeah, you got SMB1 and 3. Makes sense. But it just built on the first one in so many ways and improved on so many aspects. It's a Mario game. It's the classic Mario game. So the gameplay, the platforming was fluid, responsive. I know other games had done this before, but for me, this is one of the first games I played where there was there's the main gameplay, the side scrolling, typical Mario stuff, but also then you got the overworld. And again, I know that's not, wasn't new, but for me, I was like, oh, wow, it just added this extra dimension to the game world. It made the world feel more big. It wasn't just a series of these like side view levels. It's like, you know, you're actually navigating through various worlds and environments. I thought that was cool.
And there's just so much more going on too. Mm-hmm. They're just more on screen and
exactly
and graphic wise and enemy wise and
each world had like a kind of its own theme, and it looked visually like, if you think about Super Mario Brothers 1, you know, there's the castles, the underground stuff, and kind of the regular worlds, and for the most part the theme, the look would change a little bit, but those three, it was all pretty much the same. And this one, it was like all, is it eight worlds?
I think eight.
All had kind of a very distinct look and feel to each one. And I thought that was super cool. But yeah, more enemies, more power-ups.
Yeah, and you had some of those, I think on that little map, you know, at the beginning, you could go play little side games.
Oh, yeah.
To try to get more coins. And so you kind of mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah, the mini games. Like, they're so, like, such a basic little thing to add in there. But, man, it was cool. It was cool to be like, oh, yeah, go to Toad's house and do a little stupid slot machine thing or card flip game and get some items you can use. It was super cool.
Because they had the little slot machine thing, right, with Toad, and you tried to match him up, I think, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Were you ever able to kind of watch? It moved so fast, but were you ever able to kind of time it?
I always felt like I could. Like, I remember thinking, like, when the bottom of the star or whatever hits this spot in the middle square, you got to hit it, and you'll get it at the in the third square. I don't know. I remember thinking I could, but who knows if I actually could.
Yeah, you thought, oh, I got it. And you get so excited.
The only thing about it that I did not like was the stupid little Hammer Bros. I mean, everybody hates the Hammer Brothers. They're the worst. Oh. The Hammer Bros. And they had a little like Hammer Bro, I don't know, caravan or whatever that would move around the map. And sometimes you'd get stuck having to go to it. And it's just like, oh, no.
So frustrating. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get to the end to fight Bowser or not?
Yes, but I don't recall. I don't know that I've ever. I must have played through the entire game, but I know I've got to the end many times using the warp whistles.
Yeah. Warp. Yep.
But I played. This was a game I played a ton on other people's NES. That's something I probably should have preferenced. I never actually had the original Nintendo, but everyone else on Earth did. I had cousins that did. I had friends that did. So I played a ton of these games. And I think that's also why some classics that people talk about a lot aren't on my list, because, you know, I mean, if my friends didn't have it, I didn't play it that much. But Super Mario Brothers 3 was one, of course, everyone on Earth that had a Nintendo had this game. And also Mario All-Stars, I had that, so I played it a ton there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. The enhanced graphics version, yeah.
Interestingly, I always was like, I didn't like the new graphics. I was like, I want it to look like it's supposed to look. I don't need these fancy graphics.
Yeah, it's like, doggone it. This is what it looked like when I was a kid. I'm not changing. Yep. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. I'm like 13. Get off my lawn, Super Mario Brothers.
That was a fun game. It was just basically Mario on steroids, or Mario turned up to 11. So many more secrets, so many more power-ups and enemies, and the graphics were better, and the giant Bowser ship at the end, I think it was gigantic, and getting through all those little cannonballs, and oh man, it was a good game.
And you mentioned the music, and this is definitely, I mean, the Mario games have always kind of had iconic music, but this is one of the better. Like, I even now I can still picture the airship music, you know, from the from the ship Bowser airship levels, and you know, the Mario Brothers music is always good, but yeah, this was one of the ones where the music was used well, whereas in other games you will get like a 2-second loop that just plays the entire time regardless what level.
This one and my pick, I think the music, Nintendo really, especially their own games, really seem to knock it out of the park on the music. I don't know, because they understand you're going to be listening to this over and over and over again. So it has to be something that doesn't grind on you. And I agree, Mario Brothers.
I'd say your pick is definitely the music is one of the most well-known aspects of your pick without getting too much into spoilers.
Yeah. Well, let's just segue into mine, I guess. Mine is The Legend of Zelda, the very first one. I mean, you just say Legend of Zelda and instantly you can start hearing the music, because they still use it today, even on the Switch. It's still part of that game. And it came out actually in Japan. I didn't know this, but it came out on a disc peripheral for the Famicom in 1986, February of 1986. And that disc system, I guess, when I was researching this, so the series that started on it was The Legend of Zelda, Metroid, and Castlevania all came from this original floppy disk. They had some sort of proprietary add-on. You know, we talked about add-ons on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. This was an add-on that they had, and that's where these three started from, that system, not the NES, which I didn't know that. So it was kind of interesting. But yeah, this came out in February of 86. Of course, we all know Link is the main character in Zelda, the princess. Of course, you're trying to go around and collect the Triforce and then take on Ganon at the end, of course. And they originally had it so that you could create your own levels. So just imagine what it came out originally, where you could play the game, but then you could also make your own levels as well, which would have been really cool, I think.
Yeah.
But they cut that out and just put it on the cartridge. But it was the first home console that had the battery saving ability. You didn't have to enter a code or anything. You could just save it, your gameplay, exactly where you were at. For those that don't know, Zelda was a kind of a quasi-action adventure role-playing game. It was never really one of one thing. It had a little bit of everything in there, where the goal wasn't necessarily to get high score, which was what Shigeru Miyamoto wanted. He was the creator of the game at Nintendo. Man, that guy, Mario Brothers, his creation. Zelda, his creation.
Oh, he's a legend, man.
Oh, yeah. Nintendo would not be where they're at without him. But yeah, anyway, sure. He wanted a game that didn't have to have a scoring system. The goal was to progress just like role-playing, kind of level up and save the princess and defeat the bad guy. It was not a smooth scrolling game like Mario Brothers, where it would just go constantly. You would get to the edge of the screen and then it would shift the next screen over, and you just kind of play that screen, and then you go to the top of the screen or wherever you were going to go, and it would shift to the next screen. So it was a little annoying, but still, you know, at the time it was still amazing, because you had this, just like Mario Brothers, you had the upper world, which had your trees and your grass and your rock, and then you had your dungeon levels. And so you had 9 different dungeons that you had to get through, and each dungeon had its own boss, and you had to collect different items like a bow, a flute, a bombs, and you would collect money. And this is another, okay, so this one had a little bit of a side game. You played pick the 3 different jewels. Whichever one you picked would give you jewels, or it would take away jewels from you, which is kind of so annoying. I don't know, did you play this game, Randy?
I didn't know. I think I mentioned this on previous episodes. The Legend of Zelda was one that, because I didn't own a system, I did not like this game for the longest time, because if I'd go over to somebody's house and they'd be like, let's play Legend of Zelda. You mean I'm going to watch you play Legend of Zelda for 3 hours? It is a one-player game. It's not even a good game for like switching controller back and forth. So I was not a huge fan of this game, because like one-player game when you don't own the system isn't that fun. I recognize, though, like, I mean, obviously it's had a huge impact on the gaming, on gamers and the gaming industry. So like I recognize what's great about it, but I've never actually played through it myself.
Yeah. It's just a lot of different aspects, especially for that time, where you could bomb walls to find secrets. They even throw in some humor with it, where you blow up a wall to get in, and then they make you pay. They said, hey, you broke my door, you're gonna pay for my door, and they take money away from you. So you burn bushes and you'll find secret doors to get secret stuff. And it was just a really, really fun game. It was the first game that we got on the NES in December of 88. And I told this story on other episodes, but for the person listening that doesn't know, we got it on Christmas Eve, And the next day at my grandma's, you know, we did a big Christmas thing at my grandma's. So we got the Nintendo and the games on Christmas Eve. But the next day we had to take a plane flight to Florida, which you're going to Florida. It's amazing. But when you're a kid, then you got a NES and you're leaving the next day.
Right. Yeah.
So that's torture for 2 weeks. You don't get to play a Nintendo for 2 weeks. It's just sitting there at home, not doing anything.
That's so
they
brutal.
Wouldn't let us take it with us. So we stayed up the whole night and just played Zelda pretty much that whole night. That was just a fun memory. But like I said, you have Hidden Doors. And even to this day, I can still, if I pick it up and play it, I still know where a lot of these doors are at. And, you know, I can't remember what somebody told me 5 minutes ago, but I can tell you exactly how many bushes over you have to go to burn that bush to get the secret door. So go figure, huh?
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Then they had the Stella View was a peripheral that you could put on the Super Famicom. And it had a remix version of the original Nintendo, of the original Legend of Zelda, complete with voice acting. Because I guess they had a different version that came out that was a little different on the disc system that I was talking about. So the disc system and version and the NES cartridge version were, I guess, a little bit different. And so they had that Stella version or Stella View peripheral that we talked about a little bit in a previous episode that was like a modem that you hooked onto it. And it had the original version on there. So it was kind of cool. And of course, the music. Like you said, the iconic music on Zelda is still prevalent today. I mean, again, you tell somebody, hey, what's the music to the original Legend of Zelda? And they'll like, oh, yeah, I know exactly. If they hear it, they'll know exactly where that comes from.
Sorry, I was just going to say, maybe you don't have this information, but wasn't there a case, and maybe it was the disc version, but wasn't there a case where the Japanese cart was different than the U.S. cart, had more... The audio capability was better, so the music, I mean, it's the same music, but it had more parts. It was like fuller sounding or something, like the music.
Yeah, I think you might be right. The disc version had a microphone built into the controller, so you could do some different, what do you want to call it, features or capabilities in the game by speaking into the controller. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure on the chip. Yeah, the chip system might have been a little different in the Japanese version than the American, maybe. But yeah, just a great game. I think I got a list here, but it was... So Super Mario Brothers was number one as far as sales-wise. Duck Hunt, Mario Brothers 3, Mario Brothers 2, and then Zelda. So Zelda was the fifth highest-selling game of the system. But yeah, Mario Brothers 2 doesn't get a lot of love, I guess. It's still...
Right.
But one last thing I wanted to mention is there's a guy on YouTube that beat the entire Zelda game using only bombs. Not, you know, you can get the swords and different other things. He beat the whole game just using bombs. I can't even imagine that on this game. That would be difficult. And Link was left-handed. I didn't even realize that until several years ago. Somebody told me that Link uses his left hand for his sword, not his right hand.
Really interesting.
So, he's a lefty.
There is, I don't have a Switch, but Super Mario Maker 2 makes me really want a Switch just for that game. But they had that update not long ago that added Link as a playable character. Like he's basically, it's a Link power-up. Like Mario gets a power-up and turns into Link. And it gives you Link's like sword, shield, and bomb ability in an otherwise Mario game, and it's resulted in some pretty cool levels. Just wanted to mention that.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah, remember you're a big fan of kind of the creation thing. So if the original Zelda would have had a creative mode, you probably would have liked it.
Right, exactly. I'd be like, no, I'll create a level, and then you can play that. That's how that would have went.
Yeah, I'll watch you play my level. That's what you would have been like.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. No, yeah, for sure. I'm just fascinated that it had a level creation. I'm sure it's not the first game to do it, but man, that's way before it was super. It's not that common, but way before it kind of became prevalent in games. Like,
oh yeah, 1986. Yeah, that would have been almost unheard of. But still, yeah, that was a cool concept. But I think later on, I remember seeing it on emulators that you can go out and go to websites and make your own Zelda levels now. They've got tons of indie stuff that can do that. So fun game.
All right. My next one is one that I botched the trivia for, Punch-Out. or Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I mean, they're essentially the same game. So Punch-Out, the original release, the first release was the gold version, as it's known, which Wikipedia says was released for an NES Open Tournament golf competition. That does not make sense to me. I don't understand why would it be. I know like Nintendo would do some competitions, but a golf? I was confused by that.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Golf competition.
Maybe it's a typo or something.
Well, maybe they were a sponsor.
Oh, you know, that could be.
That might be what it is. That's probably one of those rare cartridges that's worth $80,000 or something like that. Yeah.
So that was released September 18th, 1987. And then I can't remember his name offhand, but somebody saw Mike Tyson, was like, this guy's amazing. Let's get him on a, let's sign a license with him. And they released the game as Mike Tyson's Punch Out in North America, October 18th in 87, Japan, November 21st of 87, and Europe, December 15th of 87. So they Europe actually didn't have to wait that long that time. And,
no.
And then after the Mike Tyson's license expired, and in my mind, I was always like, well, also after he got in a whole bunch of trouble,
yeah,
they released the game as just Punch-Out and replaced, because Mike Tyson was the like the final boss. They replaced him with, was it Mr. Dream?
Mr. Dream, I think. Yeah.
And that came out in August of 1990 in North America and Europe. So yeah, Punch-Out was based on, it was based on a two-screen arcade game. I don't know why, but the story of this is kind of fascinating. Just because Nintendo developed Punch-Out because they had a surplus of arcade monitors they needed to use up. So they're like, we designed some games that use two monitors, and that's Punch-Out was one of those games.
Awesome.
So obviously they had to kind of change and scale it back because the arcade game is much more like Super Punch-Out on SNES, to where your character is like a wireframe character so you can see through them. Now, according to Wikipedia, quote, Takeda and his crew realized that it would be impossible for the NES port to faithfully emulate the arcade graphics. So instead of making the playable boxer wireframed or transparent, they decided to make the playable boxer more short-bodied so that players could easily see opponents over the large head, over the large headroom of the playable boxer. You know, that's how you end up with Little Mac. Just a little dude.
Yes.
It's
yeah. These giant, you know, the guys you're fighting are giant, and then there's a little tiny Little Mac.
I think it's a super smart move because, first off, Little Mac, it's he's memorable. I mean, his trainer should have been more memorable to me. I can't believe, Doc, it's so simple. That's so simple.
Yes.
But also, like, it's smart. Like, as a kid playing this game, part of what I like about it, what's very cool, is the opponents are huge. They're huge. For a Nintendo game, like, they take up a substantial amount of that screen space.
They do.
And if you know anything about how the Nintendo works behind the scenes, like, that's not just like one sprite or whatever. In order to do something that big, it's basically a whole bunch of little sprites they've got to like coordinate, you know?
And they have a special chip, I think, they had to use for that to make it.
So, you know, big cartoony characters. And then, like I was saying, as it's smart, you know, as a kid, you're playing it. Yeah, you're the little guy and you're beating up all these big dudes. Mac himself is not intimidating at all. But it makes him more, it adds to the kind of cartoony nature. Also, Mario cameo in a non-Mario game is always interesting. I remember every time, and back in the day, Nintendo was more laxed. Non-Nintendo games would occasionally throw Mario in as cameo. I mean, that's not going to fly anymore. But as a kid, I always remember seeing Mario in other games and be like, oh, is that what's he doing here?
They like to do that, Nintendo especially.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The cutscenes were very memorable. Go ahead.
It's been a while since I played, but each guy you're fighting kind of has their own pattern and their own kind of theme, right?
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. So, yeah, each opponent was kind of like a boss fight, really. You know, like the old school boss fights where it's more about like recognizing the weak spot and figuring out the pattern. And that's pretty much every opponent, which made the game, which was kind of an interesting angle to where like that's the whole game.
Who was your favorite guy to fight, or maybe the one that frustrated you the most? I don't know.
Okay, so that's another thing. Like The opponents were all interesting. Many of them were very stereotype, very stereotypical. They were stereotypes for sure. Some of them probably wouldn't play quite as well today, but they're all very cartoony and goofy. The one that always stuck with me was King Hippo, I think.
Yeah,
just because it's like, what's with this dude? And it's and if you remember back in the day, like when they had the Nintendo cartoons, like the Super Mario Brothers cartoon and stuff, like King Hippo was always in there. I don't know why. It's like, why did
they would just like throw him in there?
Yep. But I think one I remember hating the most. Oh man, okay. So there was the guy that would kind of like teleport around the room.
Yeah, the Great Tiger.
Yeah. That guy drove me nuts, but. In researching, I was like, well, how many, because I've never beat the game. I don't think I would usually get to Bald Bull, and that's who would take me out every time. Cause he'd do that little, like bouncing thing.
Bull charge.
Yeah. He always took me out.
My son, we have a NES classic and he loves Mike Tyson's Punch Out, but it's hard. I've played it. I can still, I get up to the one after the tiger guy. I can't remember. Maybe that is the Bald Bull, but I've seen videos. You've probably seen videos of people fighting Mike Tyson, and he's just so fast.
So fast.
He blinks an eye and then he punches, and that's how you kind of tell. You can kind of teleport his what he's going to do, and you get the stars. So if you have the stars, you get to do a little. Mac does his super punch, and there's certain formulas that you do to get stars from the guys that can help you. But it's a fun game. It's one that anybody, in my opinion, can pick up and play now. Whether or not you get past Glass Joe, the first guy, I don't know, but
yeah. And it was also like, it is kind of like arcadey, very video gamey boxing, but it was like, if you could nail that star uppercut, like it was satisfying. It felt like there was a good impact to it.
Yes.
And that was fun. And then also got to mention the music. This is another game with great music. So the theme song for Punch-Out is actually a song called Look Sharp, Be Sharp, March, composed by Marlon Merrick between 1953 and 1956. The theme was originally used for the TV and radio program Gillette Cavalcade of Sports, which covered a variety of sports from the 40s into the 60s, but eventually became kind of more... The show itself focused more on boxing as it went along. And the song was also featured in the 1980 boxing film by Martin Scorsese, Raging Bull. So,
okay.
I wonder if, I mean, they would have had to have licensed it, right?
I would think so.
It seems kind of early enough in video games to where they could just be like, well, let's just do that song. Who's going to care? But, I feel like they probably licensed it. Nintendo usually wasn't shady in those kind of ways.
But what a interesting! I didn't know that. What a weird way to pull some music. So some programmer must have watched that movie. I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah, and I like that it's got ties to Raging Bull, a movie about boxers, as well as the Cavalcade of Sports, which kind of became known as a boxing TV program way back. Yeah, that's fascinating to me.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad you found that. But one thing we have to touch on is the pink jumpsuit.
Yes. Yes, during the cutscene. I was going to say memorable cutscenes, but actually, like, that's pretty much the cutscene, right? Like, the one scene is the kind of Rocky training the jogging thing where you got Doc on the bicycle behind you and you're in the pink jumpsuit. Yeah.
And it gives you the long code so that you don't have to fight all three guys every time. I think it broken up into threes or fours. It was threes. Three. So you get three boxers, you get a belt, you get a code, then you get three more boxers, you get a belt, you get a code, and you kind of keep moving up. So, yeah, the long code that you had to write down someplace, and then you can't find it.
I remember... going over, like, because I'd play Nintendo at my cousin's house a lot, and I'd go over there, and there'd just be like pages randomly down in the like video game area with random codes. And sometimes you'd look at it and be like, what is this code for? What game does this even go to? What level is this going to be? Like, so yeah.
Is that a six or is that a B? What is it?
Oh, man. No. Oh, trying to figure out. That's right. The alphanumeric. Oh, man.
It's a good game. And any of these that we have, I would recommend anybody grabbing an emulator and playing it just for the heck of it. It's a fun game.
That's the thing. Like, for even as old as these are, and for how much I've played them, and I'm sure everybody, quote unquote, has played these games. Super Mario Brothers 3 and Punch Out, you can pick both those games up and play them for a good bit of time. They're still such good games.
The replayability is incredible. I just looked up that Punch-Out was 17 of the best-selling Nintendo games of all time, and it sold over 3 million copies. Whoa. So definitely very popular. So, yeah, it's just totally different. It's not like anything else, really. It's not a side-scroller like Mario. Mm-hmm. It's not an RPG action game like Zelda. It's really unique.
And it didn't have the feel, the kind of dry, and sometimes especially the older games, the older sports games felt dry and kind of clunky because a lot of times they were struggling to kind of translate this sport to Nintendo controls. It didn't have that feel at all, and I think that it benefits from coming from an arcade game to where they kind of had the arcadey video game feel of how the fighting would play out already down.
Yeah,
it translated well to the NES. For sure.
It was well thought out.
Yeah.
So one I have is an oldie. It is Kung Fu that was released in 1985. And most of my picks are more of a nostalgia thing. The reason I like Kung Fu is because that's the first game on the Nintendo I ever actually got to play and actually grab a controller and play it. It was over at a friend's house. I think might have been January of 87 or 88. I'm not 100% sure, but you know, you have an overnighter at a friend's house and we're all watching TV, and he had a NES at his house, and him and some other friends were playing Kung Fu. I'm like, what's this? You know, I've seen the Nintendo commercials on TV. I was like, you have a Nintendo? Holy cow. And so I actually got to play it, man. I was like, this is awesome. Look at the graphics. Look at this controller pad. It's not a joystick like the Atari, and this is totally different. And so I was just blown away. But Kung Fu, it's a side scroller. You control Thomas, the Kung Fu master, and he has to fight through five different levels of the Devil's Temple. You couldn't get any more 80s than that, I guess. And he has to, of course, rescue his girlfriend because you know, it's the 80s, you got to. And the boss that he's trying to get that kidnapped his girlfriend is Mr. X. Again, this is just checking every 80s trope box that you can think of. And it's based off an arcade game made by Irem, is the name of the company, by Takashi Nishamiya. And he also created Moon Patrol. And then he also created Street Fighter, the original one for Capcom. So I thought that was kind of interesting. At least the Street Fighter and Kung Fu kind of stuck to the martial arts type of format. Mm-hmm. But it's also loosely based on a Bruce Lee movie called, let's see, where was that? I have my Game of Death. And the Game of Death, it's almost the same exact premise. He has to kind of fight these different levels. You're fighting other ninjas. And then he has to climb up a ladder and go to this next level on this pagoda until he gets to the final boss. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar actually made an appearance in that movie. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, I've watched you can go look it up. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Game of Death, and you'll see it. It's kind of a goofy, it's very Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. Kung Fu and 10 Yard Fight were both made by Irem, and they were the first third-party titles for the Nintendo, which I thought was interesting. Now, the sound and the graphics are, you know, definitely not groundbreaking, but again, it was just more of a nostalgia pick. You're just kicking and punching your way through the guys. There's really it's not complicated at all. It's a hard game.
I'll tell you, going from playing Kung Fu on the Atari 2600, because it was on there too.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, and then playing it on Nintendo blew my mind. I was like, wow. I mean, this game's still hard, but wow, it looks like they look like people, and there's actually like a cool setting. There's a cool backdrop to everything. So yeah.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I didn't know. Of course, I guess Atari had about every game that you could think of right. on Atari. Yeah. So see, we were blown away, just different reasons. Mm-hmm. But you had, I think they only had, three or four different enemies on it. And you had to either, kick low, kick high, punch, or punch low. There really wasn't a whole lot to it. But I watched a YouTube video on it. Maybe I'll try to include a link in the notes where he actually goes through and says, okay, this is what you're supposed to do here. I really never knew that when I was a kid playing. I was like, no, you just kick and punch and get rid of the guys. But there's actually some strategy to it as well. But it's just a fun little side scroller. But again, it's more because, that's the very first game I ever played Nintendo on, so I kind of always remember just being blown away by it. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Look at these controls. You got two buttons. Holy cow.
Man, it was hard. That's a good example of a game that I liked and I wanted to like more, but it just got hard. And I was like, eventually yeah. I'd get bored with it. I'd be like, they just keep latching on to me and my life drains. Cause that's
they
kind
won't
of
let go. Yeah.
They just kind of like walk up and latch on to you. Like you can kick them. Oh, and some of them would throw knives and stuff.
Yeah. There's a guy. Yeah. That's what kept getting me, is a guy that throw knives at you. And I never was able to jump to avoid it. And I don't think I got past maybe the second or third level at best. Mm-hmm. It was a hard game.
All right. Well, my last pick is, for me, like Kung Fu for you, was definitely a nostalgia pick. It wasn't like the first NES game I played, but it was in that handful of early NES games that I played a lot. And this is one that was a big seller. I mean, it did pretty well. I don't think it's going to be on like the greatest selling Nintendo list or anything, but it did well. But like, it's not generally regarded as a good game anymore, but it's Bugs Bunny Crazy Castle. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes, I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever played it.
Okay, so this is one of those licensed games where the developer would basically, like, they had the game, and then they would just reskin that same game depending what character they had the license for. So in Japan, this was this might be the first release of it, the first version of it. It was released as Roger Rabbit. February 16th, 1989. North America got The Bugs Bunny Crazy Castle in September of 89, and then also Japan got a Game Boy port of it. The Japan Game Boy version of this was actually released before the other ones, and it was Mickey Mouse. So basically just throw in whatever cartoon character you got the license for. That's what this is.
So the same game was Roger Rabbit, Mickey Mouse, and Bugs Bunny?
Right. Yep.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Now, the game did pretty well, at least over here. And I'm pretty sure it ended up I don't know if the sequels retained whatever properties they were overseas, but it ended up getting like five sequels. I want to say one or two on the NES, and then it did really well on the Game Boy. It hit the Game Boy and got, I think there might have been a total of five Crazy Castle games for the Game Boy. This is, I mean, obviously the version I played, it was Bugs Bunny. Now, it was kind of a side-scrolling puzzle game, a little bit like a platformer, but you couldn't jump. So you played as Bugs Bunny navigating levels that consisted of stairs, platforms, doorways, and doorways that would take you up and down, and sometimes pipes, kind of Mario style, where you just enter a pipe and travel around the level and go exit somewhere else. But I wouldn't call it like a hardcore puzzler. It was the levels kind of had a maze aspect to it, but the main kind of the puzzle aspect was, so you had to avoid enemies in the level, and you had to get to collect carrots, I believe it was, in different parts of the stage. So you kind of had to figure out which way you could go that you wouldn't get boxed in by an enemy, stuff like that. And the enemies included Wile E. Coyote, Yosemite Sam, Daffy Duck, and three different versions of Sylvester for whatever reason. They were all Sylvester, but they had slightly different color versions. I watched a YouTube video where they kind of thought maybe it was because if the original version of this was Roger Rabbit, the three different Sylvesters would make sense because Roger Rabbit had the weasels, which were several weasels that all kind of looked the same.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
And then there were items you could get. You get a boxing glove where you could, you know, kind of take an enemy out and stuff like that. Okay. Or one of, it's so stupid, but one of my favorite things to do was on some like platforms, there'd be like a safe or something or an anvil. And if you waited for an enemy to walk underneath, you could push it off and it'd fall on them. And that'd be a way to
drop
kind of
on him.
Take care of them.
Yes. Oh man. That's Looney Tunes.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, that's all it was, is you'd go around these levels, you collect the carrots, and then the end door or whatever would open. You'd exit it and go to the next level. I can't remember. I didn't think to look this up when I was doing research. It's one of those games. I can't remember how many levels, but it's got just a ton of levels because they're all pretty basic. There's slight variations, but it's all just like different configurations of like two or three themes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It almost sounds a lot like, I don't know if you played Bomberman or Adventures of Lolo. It's kind of a puzzle. It all fits kind of on one screen and you have to open different doors, and sometimes there's enemies and stuff. So
yeah, I mean,
it kind of sounds like that.
Yeah, it works on that kind of principle. Very, very much like, I don't know about the Lolo one, but like Bomberman is kind of like top down, very maze like. This is like that, except a little less confined, but it's side scroller.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has elements of that.
Okay.
And
it's something that I assume you can, since you didn't have a NES, but you could just pick it up and just start playing different levels. And I assume you're trying to get to a certain end, or it gets harder as the longer you go, I suppose.
It does get harder as you go. And I mean, I don't really. So the end of the game is like, you're supposed to, you know, like a lot of old school games, you've got to save your girl. And, and I think the character is Honey Bunny or something like that, who didn't actually
female version. It's like girlfriend for Bugs Bunny.
It's yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't think she ever appeared in any of the cartoons or anything, but she's actually like apparently been in a bunch of Bugs Bunny cartoons or Looney Tunes comic books and stuff like that. So she kind of had a life outside of it, but I think she was invented for this. Just like, do we have a female, you know, I imagine Mickey Mouse, it's a Minnie Mouse, right?
Minnie Mouse.
Do we have a female Bugs Bunny? Sure. Honey Bunny. Here you go.
Honey Bunny. There you go.
But yeah,
you can almost picture an exec in the Nintendo or Warner Brothers. We need with a cigar in his mouth. We need a female bunny. Anybody got any ideas? How about Honey Bunny, sir? I like it.
Looks exactly the same, just slightly different color, and just got a bow in her hair.
Or okay,
a bow
let's do
on
it.
Her ears.
Bow on her ear. Yeah, each ear.
But yeah, the whole goal was just, yeah, beat the level, go to the next level, see how far you could go. And it had a password system. But if I remember correctly, the passwords were actually super easy. There were four digits. So way shorter than normal.
Mike Tyson.
right. And again, not a great game. But when I was like trying to think back to like, what are some of my favorite games that I'd like to make a point to play on Nintendo when I go over to friends' houses and stuff, and that was one that I always liked a lot.
It's kind of, which cartridge do you grab when you got 2 hours, mom's here, what are you gonna grab and play?
Right,
you
know? Right. Usually it would be like a Punch Out or one of the Mario games, and if not that, this one.
Yeah, because you could play two or three levels, and if you had to leave or go, it didn't really matter.
Exactly.
You know, just like Mario, I can go get through a few levels, Punch Out, I can beat a few guys, and then, you know, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense as to why it did so well on the Game Boy. Like, that's pretty good mobile gaming right there. Like, that kind of setup. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. You don't really want to, on a portable system, you do want a lot of gameplay, but you don't want a long, like a Zelda game. I don't know. They did port that over to the Game Boy, but it's kind of like mobile games now. You don't want an hour playing the game.
Right.
I've got, you know, a 10-minute commute, a 20-minute commute. You know, this game would lend it. That would be perfect for that type of person. So Maybe they have it. Do they have this on Android? I wonder.
Oh, I wonder. Well, I mean, technically, you can get NES emulator real easy. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know if there's probably a lot of games that are basically the same type of thing now.
That's true. But as we see with this one, you can reskin it and put whatever you want.
Right. Exactly.
Cool. Well, my last pick is Pro Wrestling. This was an old game that came out originally. Well, it's kind of the classic series that they call it. Kung Fu was part of that too. It was the classic series that they had that came out real early on and had the pixelated covers that I love. Those are fun. Fun story behind that, but we'll get to it later. But came out in March of 1987. It's a pro wrestling game that came out on the NES in 87. I mean, you can't get more 80s than that, because as we know, in the late 80s, wrestling was getting huge. You had the Hulk Hogan and everybody else coming on board. I just liked it because is the simplicity of the game, that the action provided, the music, like most NES games, is kind of unforgettable. It has that looping music that you just say pro wrestling NES game, and I can instantly start hearing the loop in your mind of the music that's in there. Now, this wasn't the first wrestling game, but it's one that I think, and a lot of people agree, kind of got it right. They had some attention to details. They had the two little commentators in the background. They had the ref that would move around the ring, and I would always try to catch the ref, but he'd always move out of the way. It was always fun. And then you had the cameraman on the outside of the ring trying to catch the action. And the crowd noise, fun fact, the crowd noise cheering that they had in the background was the same one that they used in Punch-Out.
Oh.
So Punch-Out borrowed it from this game. They just said, hey, we got some crowd noise in this old pro wrestling game. Let's put that in the Punch-Out game, too. And then it has the same intro music as all the other sports games that Nintendo had at that time. They kind of had the sports series. If you look on the cartridges on this one, and then there's tennis and some other ones, they have a little logo in the lower left-hand corner. Kung Fu had it, too. They had these little categories that they would put all the games into. So Kung Fu was part of the action series, and then pro wrestling was part of the sports series that they had. And they use the same music on this one as they do as golf and tennis, and I think maybe baseball. I'm not 100% sure on that. And of course, they had a roster, which is always fun. You had your different guys. You had Fighter Hayabusa, was from Japan. You had the Giant Panther, Ken Korn Karn from Korea, King Slender. You had Starman, and then you had the Amazon, the green guy that you used. And it was just one-on-one, so you didn't have tag team or anything like that. So you could play another player, or you could play the computer and try to get the belt. And that's how they did it. You could do different attacks. You could grapple. So you'd grab your opponent and then you could body slam him, or you could put him in some sort of, like the Amazon would do the piranha bite or some of their key what do you want to call it? Their finishers, for lack of a better word, but just a fun game. You could throw them outside the ring and get a count out on them. So it was just a lot of fun. It's a game that I just really liked because you could just, again, pick it up and you knew how to play, and you could play your friends or you could play the computer. Starman had his somersault kick and all these other cool moves that you tried to do. You could jump off the top rope, from the top rope down to outside the ring and do different things. And it was just a really fun game. So did you ever play this one, Randy?
I didn't. No, I've never played this, but I'm fascinated. Oh, it's so interesting of all the little details you threw out about it. I'm fascinated that it had a camera, and I'm looking at a screenshot. It had the cameraman on the outside of the ring. What an interesting little detail to throw in there.
Yeah. I mean, when I was thinking about this, I'm like, yeah, they kind of emulated WWF back in the early to mid 80s. You know, they had the ref, the cameraman, the crowd noise, the commentators. I mean, they kind of paid attention to all these little details.
Yeah, that's great.
If you look on the box art of the game, the two guys in the ring, they don't actually exist in the game. They're not in the game. But if you look at the box art, so you'll have to, I'll try to put in the show notes, you can see the shadow in the ring of the guys in the ring. Mm-hmm. So you have the shadow from the ref and the shadow from the wrestlers in the ring. I was like, whoa, what a little attention to detail that you know, who would have thought of that? But it's a fun game. So if you got an emulator, get this one. You'll love the background music that just loops over and over again, and it'll just get stuck in your head and you'll never forget it.
Awesome.
They even have the guys, the people in the crowds kind of moving. One will put his fist up in the air and then another head will pop up, and just, again, little things that you wouldn't think about.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm fascinated with this now. I'm gonna have to try
it. Yeah, you need to go challenge somebody, to challenge Jesse or Melanie to play, and you'll get frustrated. But it's a fun game. You'll love it. And again, it's a game that I think I have on our NES Classic, and you can just pick it up and play each other, and you don't really need to be instructed or anything. You just start pushing buttons. So, but that was my last pick. It's just a fun game. I think I might have played this one at the same guy's house that had Kung Fu a little later. He was a wrestling fan, and so we would play and get frustrated because they'd pin us or whatever.
Sure. Was it hard? Was this game hard? Was it kind of difficult?
When you're playing the computer, yeah. Starman was the final guy. I could never beat him. And I didn't own this one, but this is one that we would swap. So in previous episodes, I told you that we would trade games when we were kids. So, like, for example, we own Zelda. So after a while, we'd say, hey, I'll give you my Zelda if you give me your pro wrestling. And we would swap games for a couple weeks. And so that was a way to not have to play the games for a few weeks or months or however long, and then but not have to buy them. Mm-hmm. So we would borrow this game from a guy, and so we got to play it. It was fun, but I never beat it, but we would play each other. This was definitely a great two-player game. So, yeah. Randy, you were talking about earlier, if you were going to a friend's house, this would be the perfect game because you guys could play each other. You had your favorite. I liked the Amazon guy. He was kind of fun. But these guys are based on some wrestlers. Like, I think King Slender is based on Ric Flair.
Okay.
At the time, and then the Giant Panther is based on Hulk Hogan, and then some of the other guys, the Starman is based on a popular luchador in Mexico. That's where some of these came from. Just a cool little game.
Awesome.
Well, I had you want to go with your honorable mentions or a quick rapid fire on a couple others that you had on your list?
Yeah, I don't have too many here, but I'll just blow through them real quick. Super Mario Brothers, the first one, just because that was like the first super solid platformer that I ever played. Like, it kind of, I think Nintendo owes a lot to that game specifically, for sure. And then Kirby's Adventure, you mentioned Kirby, and I want to throw this one out there because I didn't play this. I've never played this on the actual NES. I didn't play it till years and years and years later on an emulator. And I'm like, wow, this game is great. Just the little mechanic of being able to suck in enemies and then take their powers and have a new little like power set you could do added such an interesting dimension to the game. So yeah, Kirby, the stupid, cute little pink puffball. That's a pretty cool game. I wish I'd have played that back in the day, but maybe I probably have been like, oh, I'm not going to play little pink bubble. It's dumb.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm too cool for that.
Yeah.
But on a note on that, the graphics on that, considering it's on a NES, is very good.
Yeah. Nailed it. It's one of those, like, it's like a top tier Nintendo game that, I mean, not that, I mean, Kirby's still well known, but it doesn't get mentioned like your Mario Brothers, Mario 2 and stuff like that. But man, that's a solid game.
It is. It came out pretty late in life. I think it came out in 92 or 91, something like that. It's pretty late in the life of the system.
And maybe that's kind of part of why you don't hear about, I mean, it's not like you never hear about it, but you don't hear it mentioned a whole lot. Came in kind of at the end of the life cycle there. And then the other honorable mention I want to throw out there is, it's not an easy game or a fun game, but I've always had a soft spot for Friday the 13th. Have you ever played this? Okay, it's such a weird game, and I still don't really understand it, because you can roam around in cabins, and you kind of almost get like a first-person view. It's not like a smooth walking around first-person view, but you can roam around in cabins. You got to stay away from Jason. You got to find these objects. You can also, there's like the overworld, I guess, is like the lake, and you can wander around the lake and go up to the woods. But what I really liked about it is, for one, it's like it's a horror themed game, and there are some horror themed NES games, but it was one of the only NES games I remember playing that had a horror theme that was actually legitimately kind of creepy. And it's mainly because the music was awesome. I love the Friday the 13th NES theme. It's such a cool theme. It's very creepy. And Jason, when he'd pop up, like it was usually when you're in the cabin, he'd pop up, like you go to the next room, it would whatever load in, and Jason's there, and you get the loud sound, and then it's like, I don't know,
jump scare.
I didn't know how, like he just would always kill me. I don't know how to play that game, but I always had a soft spot in it because it had cool music and it was legitimately kind of creepy.
It's kind of funny that they had a NES game based upon a rated R movie.
Oh man, there's a ton. Back in the day, they used to do that stuff all the time. You know, there's a RoboCop game, the Rambo. I seen a YouTube video about, I've never played it, but there's a Dirty Harry game. Like there's Lethal Weapon. Like there's a ton. Yeah.
But you got to tap into those movie franchises.
Right,
so.
Right.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned music again. So all these games you were talking about, music seems to be a soft spot, or you know, they did well on these.
It's so interesting because a lot of us, we kind of have an affinity for chiptunes and like old school 8-bit music, but Nintendo games, if the music was bad, it was awful because it was always such a short clip, and it, like the Nintendo could produce some rough sounds.
Yeah.
And I'd say of all the games I mentioned, Bugs Bunny Crazy Castle probably has like the most lackluster soundtrack, and I think they pretty much just used the same song through the whole thing. But
yeah,
I fondly remember that song. I remember like just I couldn't hum it for you, but if you look up a YouTube video, you'll hear it. Like, yeah, I got fond memories of that song, and that's one of the first things that pops in my head when I think of that game. So even that one, yeah, the music goes a long way on a lot of these games, which is
it does
so interesting.
Well, on my honorable mention was Dragon Warrior, which is an RPG game on the NES. Really hard game. You gotta do a lot of grinding. TMNT, just because, man, Turtles was white hot back in the late 80s, early 90s. And this game, we lived in a small town, and so it was tough to get. And so we got the last copy at the Walmart at our store in our hometown. And one of the guys we were friends with was so mad because he wanted it, and we got it before he did. So, and Blaster Master, that was a really hard game by Sunsoft. And then Super Mario Brothers 2, just because it doesn't always get a lot of love, but it is definitely the unique Mario Brothers, especially at that time. And you had, you know, got to pick four different characters. Which one did you like on SMB2? Did you always pick?
I think the princess, because her little hover thing was super useful.
Yep. Everybody. Yep. The princess. Mm-hmm. You figured that out real quick.
Yep.
But it was just a totally different Mario game. So it was just kind of off the wall, but I liked it. It was a fun game because you had, you know, Wart was the villain, and you know, we were used to Bowser.
Doing something so different, and I realize again, this is like in Japan, this was not Mario Brothers 2. Mario Brothers 2 is what we got as Lost Levels, which is basically the first Mario Brothers, but just way hard. And I think it was a wise decision to switch it up here. And also, like, it's different. It's like quite a bit different than the first Mario. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really strange and different, but I was never disappointed in it. I was never like,
no,
oh, I wanted more like Mario 1. Like, no, it was good. It was still fun. It's
yeah,
being able to pick things up and throw them. And it's, that's, I mean, I guess you can look kind of do that in like Mario 3 and other Mario games, but it's different. It's not the same.
It is.
You can grab shells and throw them, but it's not the same mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a totally different mechanic, but those are some honorable mentions for different reasons, but I thought all of these were fun games. Now I just want to go back and, you know, grab a NES Classic or grab an emulator and start playing. Like you said, you can get emulators on your phone and play them, but the aesthetics just aren't quite the same on the phone. It's just having that painful square controller in your hand.
Oh, and if you've ever played any of the, like the emulators on the phone, they always put up the little like button indicators on your touch screen where you're supposed to play.
Yeah.
Man, touch screen, it doesn't work. It's not, it's nothing. Like, you've got to have some type of physical controller to play these games.
Yes. I do have an emulator on my Android phone, and I purposely do not have any games on there that require a lot of fast movement.
Right.
So I have, like, for example, Dragon Warrior. You're moving fast. But if you want to play Mario Brothers on your phone, it's just not going to be the same.
No.
You're going to get frustrated.
No, especially like a platformer that requires some pretty precision jumps sometimes. Yeah.
Another one, Ninja Gaiden. That one you do not want on your phone.
Ninja, dude, oh my God. Every incarnation of that game is a game that always seems so cool to me, and I hate them. I hate those games because they're so hard. Even the newer ones, like that first one that came out on, I think it was the first Xbox, you know, the kind of newer gen Ninja Gaiden. The controls are so cool. You can wall run. It was very fluid. That game is ridiculously hard, and I got so disgusted with it. I'm like, I want to like you, game. I want to like you so much, but you make me so angry that I can't play you.
I just can't love you right now.
I can't do this.
All right. Well, hey, it's been fun. I appreciate it, Randy. It's always fun to go through these old games and talk about memories about them and try to find some fun in this world. It's always good to go back. And like I said, it's a good time, especially with all that's going on, to grab an emulator, grab a NES Classic and just dive into the nostalgia and stay in there so long you get all pruney.
You're right. Prudy with nostalgia. Soak up the nostalgia. Exactly.
Prudy, and that's what you need to do.
Calloused thumbs and
yeah, you get all wrinkly and you're like, oh man, how long you been playing? I don't know.
Increased blood pressure. I don't know if you had that.
Yeah.
those old games are so hard. Even the good ones. Super Mario Brothers 3, I remember, even that would it's so hard. At times.
It is.
I mean, comparatively to Ninja Gaiden, it's a pretty easy game, but sometimes there's jumps where you're like, why didn't you just jump? Why did it not work?
Kids today have no idea.
New games, they're the difficulty is completely different. Completely different. New games. Yeah. Most new games aren't punishing like the old games were.
No. No, they are not. They are unforgivable.
there's a little bit of a resurgence with that. Like Dark Souls is a notoriously hard game. And I don't think that the new Doom games, a new one just came out. I don't think they're necessarily hard, but they are that they had that old school sensibility of just stomp you when they can. And most new games aren't that. And these games, it's like, no, you get X amount of lives. You're going to accidentally jump into a hole 30 times, and then you have to start over at the beginning. It's like, no.
Yeah, at the very beginning. Yeah, you have to go through all of it again. Well, hey, it's been fun, Randy. I appreciate it. We'll have to do it again. I don't know what topic we'll tackle, but we'll find something to tackle again. So, remind everybody. I'll put the links in the show notes, but remind everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, so... Again, thanks for having me on. This is always fun. I don't even know how many appearances this makes for me on the show now, but it's always a great time.
Oh gosh, at least four, I think. This might be number five, but I'll put a link in the show notes to all your episodes that you're on, so people can dive into the Randy Lee combination in the video game world.
The video game saga. Yeah, I've been Randall. You can hear me on Grawlix Podcast. It's grawlixpodcast.com. And I also do some other things. I run the Electronic Media Collective Podcast Network. And that's electronicmediacollective.com. And I also am a freelance podcast producer and editor. So if you're in need of services, check out podedit.com. It's podedit.com.
Well, thanks, Randy. I appreciate it. And we'll have to do it again soon.
All right. Thank you.
It's always a great time talking with Randy. I really love doing episodes with him. It's a good time. He really knows his stuff and has a passion for video games and everything else as well. So like I said, go to covertnerd.net and get the show notes for this episode. And you can also listen to other episodes as well and find the ways on the website to contact me via email, social media. Let me know what you think of the show. Give me some ideas. If you want me to deep dive into a topic, let me know. I would sure appreciate any feedback from you. And until next time, nerd it up.